Channel 2 over. By mistake, this is Channel 2 over. I skipped Channel 1 over. I skipped Channel 1 over. By mistake, this is Channel 2 over. I skipped Channel 1 over. This is Barbara's last tape at breakfast on Tuesday morning, the 16th of December, 69. Barbara's last tape, Tuesday morning, December the 16th, 69. Channel 2 over. I skipped Channel 1 over. She talks on that fine topic, what we could do to reschool, her term, a horse-like phase champ. Channel 2 over. Tuesday at breakfast, 16th of December.
Mr. Snyder finds it a little difficult to sell to individuals. He'd rather sell his horses to professionals. I've seen a little of the people that buy horses, and it's almost a matter of educating some of them. That's the way it was with Faye out here. Old Johnny Ross spent all sorts of time helping her out on these horses, and if the horse didn't suit, he'd get her another one. He charged a little, you know. He made a little on them, but I never thought he made enough to justify all the trouble he went to. Now, the other thing you were talking about was the parents want the children to have equal amounts.
Well, that wouldn't bother me. But I ran into something I'd never run into before. And then I saw more of it in England. I'd sort of had my eyes open to it by this little incident here, and I saw a lot more of it in England. And that's where the parents will take one child and deliberately hold it back or prevent it from doing as well as it could and push another one. Not necessarily the older one. Sometimes, but not necessarily. Now, the case I saw of it, this fellow up in North Carolina, he's got a rider, not even his own child, who's very good, a girl by the name of Jane Womble. And his daughter is also good, and he's also got a son. And the daughter and Jane Womble are approximately the same age. The daughter's a little bit younger. But if he has a choice of mounts, now, you know, I think, heck, if it were my daughter, I'd give her the choice of mount. But if he's got two mounts, he'll give Jane the better one because he wants her to win. It's not that she is a fantastic rider. But it's not that he wants the horse to win. It's that he wants Jane to win. And he'll put his daughter on a worse horse so that Jane can win the class. And then they came up for their Pony Club A test, and he gave Jane all this books to read up on it. And when his daughter asked for them, he said, "I don't have any." Jane, of course, passed her A test with flying colors, got the honors, I think. And I don't know how his daughter did. I'm sure she passed. But even so, this is sort of, I just couldn't quite believe it. And then I got over in England, and this family that brought a pony to be schooled, and Celia was talking about the girl that rode the pony, and she says she's not a very good rider. Her brother's a much better rider, but they won't let him, they always give the better horse to the girl. She's older. And they don't want Julian to be better than she is. So they always will arrange the mount so that she has the better mount. And if anybody's going to get courses or anything, she gets the courses. And Julian, Julian brought his pony. He's done real well with it. The girl couldn't manage it. she was supposed to be the one to ride. She couldn't handle it, so they gave it to Julian. And he's done real well with it and has entered all these pony club competitions and was up for the pony club team. And that's where Mama stepped in and wouldn't let him go on the team because his sister couldn't be on the team. Now, if he had gone on to the pony club team, he would have gone into international pony club work, competing in France, going over to France. He could have taken his pony over to France and had a really good experience. But he couldn't go on the pony club team because his sister couldn't go on the pony club team. And they don't push him. Now, he could be a really top-notch rider if they push him a little bit. I mean, you know, give him what he needs. He's interested enough. And he's certainly got the basic talent. But they don't give it to him. And, you know, they in as much as the sister gets it, he gets it, but he doesn't get anything more. And there were a couple, there was another instance in the family where they were pushing a younger son or something like that. I didn't know these people. I just heard about it. But it just startled me. It never occurred to me that if one child was really gifted, that you would hold that child back and push the other one.
Yeah.
And that's the end of Channel 2. That's the end of Barbara's last talk. Talk on her last day at breakfast on Tuesday the 16th of December 69. Tuesday the 16th of December 69. The last talk at breakfast on Tuesday, December the 16th, 69. After breakfast, Channel 2 over by mistake. Channel 2 over by mistake. I skipped Channel 1 over. I skipped Channel 1 over. And this is Barbara's last tape after breakfast on Tuesday, the 16th of December. This is Channel 2 over. This is Channel 2 over on Monday after supper, the 22nd of December, 69. Monday, the after supper, the 22nd of December, 69. Channel 2 over around 80. Channel 2 over around 80. Monday, after supper, the 22nd of December, 69.
We're talking to Mike Tilton, you know. We got Chummy down there. And he said that he fed his horses 25 quarts of grain, that's all-purpose grain, a day.
Now, we fed ours 20 quarts a day in two shifts, 10 quarts in the morning and 10 quarts in the evening. That's less than he does. But then again, ours got right much work. And ours were fed, let's see, twice a day, and 10 quarts in the morning, 10 quarts in the evening. That seems like right much, but ours worked pretty good. They'd ride right much during the day, but when we'd feed them, I'd get up in the morning 5 and catch my horse and ride out there and round up all the others. I had to open the gate first. Just had a wide gate and just open it up, and then I'd go out and then bring them in. They'd come running, they'd run through the gate, which would be opening right into the place. There wasn't any fences there. And they'd just come right in and go into their stalls. But they each had their own stall, and each one had the order of the stalls was such that the first stall was the one everybody wanted, because that was the one nearest to the feed room. And that stall was fed first, because we filled up the feed in the wheelbarrow and went along from stall to stall, and the first stall was the one that was fed first. So all the horses fought for the first stall, and second, and so on down. So the one, the horse that was always went out, got the first one and the second and right on down. And the one who was always the best, who always got the first one, was the mule, Duchess. And she would outfight all the horses. Every day. No, see, after we started, then they knew which one after then, you know. Because they didn't have to fight for them anymore. They know which one to go.
Yeah.
But when it first started, there was a fight for it, and then gradually turned up the same every day because the best horse would fight out all the other ones and so on down. And after that happened, after a while, then they just got used to which one it was. They all went in them. But the mule, she would outfight all the other horses for that first stall. And while she wouldn't outfight them, she would outsmart them. She'd find some way to beat them by trickery rather than just fighting with them, you know. She'd just outsmart them to get there first.
She had to get there first.
Yeah, yeah.
Or else somebody else would be in the stall.
That's right. Either one way or the other, instead of being way out in the pasture with all the others, she'd be right there by the gate. And then when I opened the gate, she'd be the first one to run in and get in the stall right away, see?
Yeah.
Whereas the other horse would be at the end of the pasture, and then I'd have to ride out and get them, and then when they came in, she was already in the stall.
I see.
Either that, or eventually some of the horses got wise to that. They thought, well, they'd do that too. So then she had to outsmart them other ways. Sometimes we'd have ropes across all the stalls, and when they came in, we'd untie all the ropes and let them go in. Well, if the rope was across the stall, then there's a bunch of horses fighting for that stall, but none of them could get in, she'd just jump over the rope. But see, none of the other horses could jump over the rope. she'd just jump over the rope and she'd be in. And see, then she'd pull the wool over the eyes of all the other ones, yeah. And because mules have a way, they can stand in place and just jump over a 4-foot thing, just from standing right there over a fence, just stand right there and then just pick up their front feet and go right over in one step.
They don't
over
have to have
any.
Oh,
they don't have to take a run and jump. They can just stand right there and just jump right over. See, so if they took a run and jump, you know, they'd just run into the back of the stall or something, hurt them, you know, so none of the horses would do that. But she'd just stand right there and pick up her front feet and just right over. And she'd outsmart them that way. And one time I saw, the stalls formed one of the fence lines for the pasture. In other words, the horses could come up to the back of the stalls, but they couldn't get in. They had to come around through the gate. Well, one time I saw her lay down on the ground and roll under the bottom board and into the first stall. See, the first board, you know, we had, each stall had a board around, one at about 3 feet and one about 6 feet, you know. Well, she'd just lay down and roll under the first board, and she'd just be in the stall just like that. See? And she'd be there. See, she'd come up from the pasture. She'd do that before you even open the gate.
Well, you know, that's the easiest way to get under a barbed wire fence.
Uh-huh.
You just lay
horses,
right down and roll
that's,
under.
That's
it.
Right. Now, see, horses, they're not that smart. See, mules are much smarter than horses.
That's not what
they
I understand.
Oh, they are. They're a lot more smarter than horses. And they would figure out something like that, but a horse would never think of that.
Now, on that feed, you found that those horses needed that much feed.
Yeah, because they would, when we were running them out, we'd run them out for periods of an hour at a time. And if a horse was rented out the maximum number of times, you know, he could be rented out during a day, that'd be 10 hours or so, maybe even more. People come awful early and they stay, and see, we had moonlight rides at night too, you see. So the best horses, the horses that ones that people always wanted, would get ridden a lot during the day. and they needed that much to keep up, but they couldn't even keep up with that. I think we should have fed them more, or maybe even stuck in a middle meal somewhere, because after a few days they'd get kind of low. You know, you could tell they'd slack off. It wouldn't be as peppy and all, you know. So that's why we gave them 2 days rest. We'd work 5 days and then give them 2 days rest. Rather, we'd shift it around. We'd take a third of the herd and pick their days as Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and give them Saturday, Sunday off. And we'd take the other third and give them Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and give them Monday, Tuesday off, and then switch it around like that. So that each horse would have his 2 days rest during the day, during the week. Yeah. And sometimes when we were feeding them, we didn't ever rope the or close the stalls, so that they were just free to come and go, you know. So when they'd all get in their stalls and eat, some of the horses would finish faster, and they'd go up and see if they could get them a little more somewhere, you know. So they'd come out of one of the stalls way down the way and try to come up to one of the ones up closer that still was eating. But that didn't work so well, because the horses up here would bite at them, and they'd have to go back down the line. They'd try each one as they went down the line, you know. And they'd get less and less resistance until they got down to his stall. But there was nothing there, so if he went past it the other way, then he could always run a horse out of his stall, you see. See, if the horse was higher up on the thing, went out and went down the other way, then he could always run a horse out of his stall, because the ones down below didn't bother to mess with the ones up above, because they were higher up, you know. So they so the strong ones could always get more by going down the way. So that's one of the problems. We had to start roping off the things. But one of the best things about feeding is to watch them all when you're getting ready to feed them. You're in the feed room and you're loading up the wheelbarrow with the feed. You see, you're making all rattling around. You look out the door and all these 50 heads of horses sticking out beyond the stall looking. Every one of them with their ears up. And you just look right down there and see each one of them with their eyes right on you. And if you walk across the lawn, they'd follow you.
Or you let them in the stalls before you put the feed in.
That's right, that's right. We let them in and then come by and feed them.
Yeah.
See, and then...
And close the door?
And then, well, sometimes we had to eventually close the doors, because the ones from up here would go down there and get more, see, and then these horses wouldn't get as much. But first we didn't close them. We just let them, you know, run around. But that's the greatest sight, to look at them, see them watching you as you did. And then as you went down the row and fed the first one, then the ones down further got more anxious. And they'd talk to you. They just telling you, hurry up. I'm, and then the last one down there was just frantic, way down the way. You know,
well,
he
Lord,
was getting.
It take a long time in a wheelbarrow.
I know. That's terrible.
And then you see, we would make it even worse. See, we'd run out after about the first 10 horses, and we had to go back and fill up again, you know, and come down. Well, all these 10 horses up here eating, and the next ones down the way, they were just, ooh. See, and then they'd try, but see, it wouldn't work. See, they'd try to come out, see, since they hadn't got anything, and come up, you see. But you can't ever go up. The horses ever can't go up, because the ones above them are always running away, see. So they had to stay in their stall. So, but they even got more frantic, as you know, because waiting. By the time, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I really can't tell. Well, I went hunting with him.
Yeah.
And we were going hunting rabbits that day, and we went through the nearest town, Cowan, which is only 6 miles away. And just when we got outside of town, I saw this tremendous house. In fact, they call it the castle. A tremendous house, brick house, all Victorian style of balconies and things, and a big yard in front with a circular driveway and everything. And I asked Jimmy, I said, what in the world? And he started telling me about that house, and the stories he came up with were just, I don't know, I'm going to have to get you a tape on that. I can't relate like he was, but he was telling me about the man who lives in there now, who inherited the thing. Jimmy served down there at one of his parties, and he said that he'd never go back and work for that man anymore because the man was really weird. Said Jimmy said it. He wore a cloak, just like in the movies, you know, just like a vampire. He said he looked like he was straight out of the movies from vampires. And he was telling me all about this fellow, and he had the most beautiful. He made it like he was going to jump out at me. I never seen it. He was really frantic about that guy. And he was telling me all about how that party there, and he said the guy was really nice, and he paid him well, and all, and everything. But he said it was just the weirdest thing. The guy had beady eyes and looked like he was looking right through you. And he said that every 5 minutes, the guy looked like he was looking right through you. But I'm gonna take that. That's the most fantastic story. It's the fellow with the horse that I've been riding.
That's
his horse.
Same guy.
He's a colored man.
He's the colored man that has the horse that I rode his horse in the shows, you know, and all. And he and I decided to go hunting that day. That's when we passed it.
Oh, I see.
They don't
dress their horses up?
No, not when they're just gonna ride out in the ways. But they have this one guy that I went to see he was gonna let me ride one of his horses, and I went in the tack room with him to get the equipment, you know, put on his horse, and he just grabbed some old bridle and some old saddle and put on. But I noticed on the way in the back of the tack room there was some right fancy stuff. I noticed one harness there for a buggy, beautiful, all black leather with silver metal beads all along the rim, beautiful, all polished and kept up real well. But he wouldn't put that stuff on unless he was going to go on a show.
Not every day.
No, And he had some beautiful bridles with all kind of decoration things on it, you know. But he wouldn't use that stuff just to ride down the road. They had, let's see, the harness, it had one bridle matched the harness, had black leather with silver beads all around the edge. And then another one I saw had a headpiece coming down from the head strap, the forehead strap, coming down the top of the nose to the strap that comes over the nose, a piece coming right down the middle with silver plates, you know, with carved things on them, you know, beautiful. And the reins were braided and real nice. And well, kept the leathers worked and the silver polished.
Well, now I'm not seeing that
that thing,
breastplate on the nose.
That's Mexican. That's I think that's Mexican derivation. I've seen that before a few times. Yeah, we had one down there at the stables where I worked. That guy owned had used it for parades, and had this piece coming out. What it is it's two wires about an inch apart that fasten on to the strap at the forehead and the strap at the nose, and between the two wires periodically were these silver plates or little circles about the size of a silver dollar carved on them. And some, in fact, this one had turquoise stone in them, in those things decorated around in there. Just pictures of faces, you know, had turquoise for the eyes and stuff. Real, real beautiful. And the junction of the straps right on the temple had a bright silver thing, you know, with all carved out and everything that was matched with the thing in the front. Real nice. And I see what you want, I think.
Yes, sir. It just. This is not the kind of thing that these old Eastern riders have, or these fine Western riders. But it's what this fellow sense of it.
Well, the English people wouldn't have any kind of thing like that. Their stuff's different style anyway, but they don't use that bridle for that kind of thing anyway. They don't even have a bridle that looks like that. But anyway, so I have a little piece of leather.
A little circular piece of leather.
Real leather.
And a little brass?
Maybe a little piece of brass in it, but
sort of
probably
chased.
Sort of. But, and anybody, well, I never seen a person have one just for his own. Maybe a guy who's going to ride in a parade or something. That's the only time I'd ever see one. But this guy would have one just ride in the show with. Nobody would do that.
He just thought it was nice.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he did. I've seen those things in stores before, but I never saw anybody buy one. But this guy did. He obviously thought that it was really something good.
Oh, they are in stores.
Yeah, I've seen them before in stores.
Yes.
But I never saw anybody ever have one, except this guy. He must have.
Maybe he traded.
Well, you know, art, your feeling for art, you see, that's a highly sophisticated thing.
Yeah.
But everybody has their feelings.
That's right.
So, what do you do?
Beautiful things. Beautiful piece of. It really looked beautiful. But, I guess it's to his credit that he bought it and used it.
Yeah.
For his. He wouldn't keep it where it would get stepped on or something like that. He kept it in a good, safe place.
And he's not going to use it every day.
No, he wasn't going to use it, but just in certain times. When.
Well, look, Nick, did you find that they had good tack, but didn't use it very often?
That's right. Everybody had his good stuff. Now, not everybody had. A lot of people just had. Just that's it, you know, what they use. But these some people had two sets, things that they kept nice and things that they just use every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that's sort of like your Sunday clothes.
And that's right, just like that, same thing. They brought out their good stuff for the special occasions.
Well, now would that work with your Eastern and your fine Western people?
Well, yeah, they have their stuff too, like that.
Yeah.
Like the guy, like the people who ride English have their, you know, they have their jodhpurs and their coats and one of those little hats called derbies,
yeah.
And all. They don't wear those just every day. They only bring them out in the special. And the Western riders too, they have their special shirts with the frills and the threaded silver and all that they only wear. Just at special times. Mexican blankets, saddle blankets. Everybody had a Mexican saddle blanket up there. You know, the kind with the blue and red stripes. You know, the beautiful kind when you stretch all out, they have all these bright colors going from side to side. You've seen those. And they have frills on the ends. They have white. The thread comes to unbraided at the end and form a frill at the end, white. But laterally going across it were just stripes of beautiful colors, bright blues and reds and yellows, just all intermingled. No set pattern, just an intermingling of them all going across. Beautiful things. And what they do is they roll them up in a roll and hang it over the back of the saddle and tie it on, and then it hangs down on both sides. Or they take it and unroll it, so it's only a couple feet wide, but real long, and drape it over so it almost drags the ground.
Oh.
And that makes a beautiful sight when you see one of those going by.
I was saw that.
They,
now,
they
when would they do that?
In a show. Just in a show. They would never do that down the road. They'd use it, they'd do that in a show. When they get all dressed up like that, on a horse with their bridles and their things like that, they're either going to do the
quadrilles in a show or in a parade. The quadrilles in a show are the things that they do before the show starts, like a prelude or something, you know, when all these people get dressed up fancy and they ride around in designs all over the, about 50 of them getting their ride, and they intertwine and go around like that with flags. Or they dress up for that or to go on a parade, but they take all that off when they're going to ride in the show. The hills with the whole, with the people who can hardly speaking, they have the worst grammar. But they know how to dress up the horse. Make it look fine. When it's convenient for them, not for the horse, they come out when it's convenient to him, you know, and he wakes up when he feels like doing it.
Yeah.
So that's when he goes down and feeds, when he thinks it's the right time. I mean, it doesn't have to be the same time, but it's just when it's convenient for him or when he thinks it ought to be.
Once a week?
Well, no, when they feed regular feed, they feed daily. But,
that makes a difference, Nick. If they buy the feed, or if they feed regular feed,
mm-hmm.
I see.
Sweet feed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, then they go down and feed it, you know, once a day. But now if it was hay or something, that was all they'd feed them, you know, they'd throw out a bale and might not notice it was gone for a week, you know. With the sweet feed, they get in daily, but then the times each day are different.
Even with the sweet feed?
Mm-hmm. They just go down there. Never have more than one or two horses anyway, so, you know, whereas I believe if they had a whole bunch, they might be more attentive. Because, I mean, you know, if you just got one horse, that's, you can't spend all your time for one horse, you know, like if you had a whole herd. But with one, he devotes the time he thinks he ought to be to that one. Thinking about it, they think, well, this time's going to be a good time right now, you know.
I see.
But as in reality, it's whenever they get around to it. But in their mind, they think it is a good time.
Be one of the things.
No, they might start out thinking, well, I'm gonna feed them at 9 o'clock every morning. That'd be good. But they it doesn't usually end up at 9 every morning. But then again, I believe they might really intend to do it at 9 every morning. If he gets out there by 10, he doesn't think that's bad, you know. He just thinks that he's still doing his thing.
How much regularity do they have in other things?
In other things? Well, outside their job, it's pretty regular. I mean, their job, they go that regularly and come back, go and come. But beyond that, there's not much regularity. Well, there's regularity in a general sense, but not in specific, you know, like a guy with horses or cattle or something, you know, he'll do his what needs to be done every day for them, but not at the same time every day or with the same, you know,
real direction here.
You see what?
I see a direction. Nick brought it up in this regularity of the people. I was thinking about Alvin and getting into I aim to do something, you know, but just don't get around to it. And I think that's something you could get into. Nick may not know these people well enough.
we'll do it, you know, so and so, and I'll come over at that time, and he won't have already got it done or nothing, you know. He'll say, well, we'll do it. Well, Saturday, it's always Saturday, because he works all during the week, you know, and I'll come over Wednesday night, and he'll say, well, we'll do it Saturday, you know, and I'll come over Saturday, and he's gone, not there. And then I'll finally catch him beginning of the next week, and he'll say, well, we'll do it Saturday, and always Saturday, and they always wait till Saturday. But the same way, because they, like Jimmy, he works the maintenance in the university. Same as you were saying. Those people are at, that live right around the university work in the maintenance of the university. And they work all week. And they always got to wait till do something Saturday. Hey, that's right. They got all during the week, they've been saying they're going to do such and such Saturday.
Yeah.
And they might get one or two of those things done, if that. And then that wears all the rest.
Well, do you suppose this is just a kind of sin? It's a natural sin to them. They don't really mean to be breaking promises, but just this is their way of saying.
No, I don't believe they plan to. I mean, I think they really think they're going to do it, but it's just long when Wednesday comes along, he's already forgot what he said he was going to do Saturday, Monday, and Tuesday. You know, he figures, well, it's Wednesday now, I'm going to do what I... Saturday, what I'm talking about now. He forgot about all those other things he said he was going
to
do.
But you could take your time and come down there to do it with
that's
him.
That's right.
And it'd just be your time off.
That's right. That's right.
Well, now in that sort of a system, the horse doesn't, the prospect doesn't,
no.
The regularity is.
That's right. He's got to, poor horse got to wait till Saturday, and then he might not even then. Did with his horse needed shoes or needed one put back on or something. He said, well, I'll get the guy to come around Saturday. Well, he did something else Saturday, and the guy didn't come around Saturday. So during the week, he tells me, well, I'll get him to come this Saturday. And it went on like that for a couple of weeks until finally I got the guy.
This is always the way.
Just like cookie. Fertilizer. I'll get it next Saturday. I'll get it next Saturday.
Well, have it there Saturday.
That's right. That's right. Saturday.
Yeah.
We'll fill in that. We'll make a new ditch for you Saturday. It's not Saturday with him. It's Saturday.
Yeah.
The funnest thing to be in and the funnest thing to watch is the quadrilles in the show.
Yeah.
That's when they get all... Well, first everybody gets all dressed up not his Sunday best, but his what he's got. And they get out there and they play. They go by music. They play music over the big loudspeakers. And what they do is they line up in two lines on each side of the ring, even number, same number in each line. And the two head guys in each line have a flag, one American flag and the other one is the flag of the show or the town or something. And when the music starts, they ride toward each other. And depending on what quadrilles that they worked on all week, they do those. Like the common one is to weave in a figure eight between each other. Like when the two lines of horses will ride toward each other, and when the two come head on, they'll pass right to right or left to left, and then they'll go behind that horse and between the other horse, and they'll just all the whole line will weave in and out as they pass each other. Then they get around and they circle around the ring, and then they'll come together in the middle of the ring and ride in double file, or either that or they'll come and they'll cross in an X, one horse behind another one, and go out like that, or they'll all in step and all in. You have to keep your horse right behind the next horse. Keep in line. It looks ugly if they get out of line. And or they'll do two circles, one concentric circles or circles going. They'll all line, just go round and round in a circle. But the other circle will be inside it so that they'll be weaving in and out of each other as they go around in a circle. It's really beautiful to watch, especially if you get up on top of a car or something, you can look down on it, you can see the shapes they make. And then sometimes they'll have a buggy quadrille too. Everybody will get dressed up in his buggy. You know, it's a little like this one right here, this little buggy, you know, the two-wheel job. And they have ponies for those, little ponies. And about the size of Cookie's little horse, wasn't it?
Nancy,
yeah. Same size. And they'll get out there, and they'll get all dressed in these beautiful harnesses. And the guys will be all dressed up behind them, you know, and sometimes the old men will carry their little daughters or something with them, you know. And then they'll ride around the ring like that. Well, they can't, they're not as mobile as the just the single horses. They can't do as much. But they'll ride around in a big circle, or sometimes they'll do a little interweaving. They can't interweave too much because the horses can't turn with buggies too sharp. But that's interesting, too, to watch that.
Well, now, Nick, that speaks pretty well off from their uniformity.
Mm-hmm. They can get together like that every afternoon after work and work that thing out and come up with some really nice things.
How about that?
And they seem to like to work with horses like that. You know, they like to work things out with their horses like that, you know, a bunch
that,
together.
Oh, yes,
mm-hmm.
That was the point.
Yeah, they, you know, like if it was working together with something else, it wouldn't be as good. But with horses, they all have something in common, and they like to work out something that really looks good. And they work it out real well, too.
And then they have to do a good bit of work to do it.
On their own, yeah. Mm-hmm. They come out every afternoon with their horses, you know, all the ones that are going to be in it. And they work with it, you know. They'll use the same music they're going to and practice it, you know, and get lined up.
Every afternoon after work?
Yeah, uh-huh. And then the big Saturday comes, they get to show off what they've been working on.
Well, now that's going to throw their home life.
It does. And all the wives get mad. I can hear Jimmy's wife. She's talking now. And, well, he just comes in so late, and I never get to see him. And he's out there with his horses, you know. She complains about his horses.
Yeah, but she's really proud of them.
But I think so, yeah, because I've had any number of them say, "Hey, did you see my husband in there at the so and so doing so and so?" I say, "Yeah, I think they're really proud, because all the wives come down to the shows and watch them, you know. See, because they've been gone all this. Oh yeah, yeah, and all the wives get together and talk to each other, you know, on their own." Because their husband's been out all night, every afternoon gone, you know, they got to see what they've been doing, you know. So they all come down and see.
On Saturday?
On Saturday.
No shows on Sunday?
Sometimes they have Sunday afternoon, but mostly it's on Saturday, sometimes Saturday night, and sometimes Sunday afternoon, not very often.
Hey, that's fun.
The Iliad by translation by Richard Lattimore. These are the epic similes in the thing. The great descriptive narrative of the statements that he makes first. Like now, when the men of both sides were set in order by their leaders, the Trojans came on with a clamor and shouting. I'm talking about the Trojans who are fighting there, coming along the field, and it describes them as looking like wild fowl, as when the clamor of cranes goes high to the heavens, when the cranes escape the winter time and the rains unceasing and clamorously wing their way to the streaming ocean, bringing to the Pygmaean men bloodshed and destruction. And that's talking about that's a description of how the Trojans look. They look like wildfowl as the clamor of the cranes lifting from the water, just like these men fighting. Also talking about the dust under their feet. It says, beneath their feet the dust drove up in a storm cloud. And it says, as on the peaks of a mountain, the south wind scatters the thick mist, no friend to the shepherd, but better than night for the robber, and a man can see before him only so far as a stone cast. Talking about, that's a perfect description of the dust churned up under the feet of the Trojans as they're running across the field in battle. All this dust coming up, just like just as the south wind scatters thick mist on a mountain peak. And then over here on the just like the it says that the beat of the Danans close battalions steadily into battle, talking about the Greeks as they're fighting wave after wave of men surging onward, just like it says here, the simile is, as when along the thundering beach the surf of the sea strikes beat upon beat as the west wind drives it onward, far out cresting first on the open water, it drives thereafter to smash roaring along the dry land, and against the rock jut bending, breaks itself into crests spewing back salt wash. That's just like the Danans as they come on wave after wave. And then when they clash, just like the tops of the crests of the water, as the wind hits it, spews up in the air, just like when the enemies meet in wave after wave, they all the spears go flying and everything. And the other one over here of the this is the one talking about Hector, when he's out in battle, he's fighting off the enemy, and everybody's around him in a circle, trying to get at him, and he's fighting, and just like says here, as when among a pack of hounds and huntsmen assembled, a wild boar or lion turns at bay in the strength of his fury. Perfect example of what Hector looks like. When he stops and turns around, and the guys on this side back away, just like the hounds would at a boar, you know, when he turned on them. It says, and the men, closing themselves into a wall about him, stand up to face him, and cast at him with the volleying spears thrown from their hands. And in spite of this, the proud heart feels not terror, nor turns to run. And it is his own courage that kills him. And again he turns on them, trying to break the masked men. And wherever he charges, the mass of men break away in front of him. Perfect description of what it would really look like by using another example to show what something else would look like. It's describing Telamonian Aeus as being not the mightiest of all the Greeks, because obviously Achilles is, but the strongest physical strength, you know. Sometimes he's not as great as some of the others, but just for pure physical strength, he's really great. And he says here, this is it shows the demonstration of how strong really Telamonian Aeus is. It says, nor did it still please great-hearted Aeus to stand back where the other sons of the Achaeans had taken position. But he went in huge strides up and down the decks of the vessels. He wielded in his hands a great pike for sea fighting, 22 cubits long. That's 66 feet long. He wielded this pike, 22 cubits long and joined together by clinchers. And as a man who is an expert rider of horses, who when he has chosen and coupled four horses out of many, makes his way over the plain, galloping toward a great city along the traveled road, and many turn to admire him, men or women, while he steadily and never slipping jumps and shifts his stance from one to another as they gallop. So Aeus ranged, crossing from deck to deck of the fast ships, taking huge strides, and his voice went always up to the bright sky as he kept up a terrible bellow and urged on the Danans to defend their ships and their shelters. While on the other side, Hector would not stay back among the mass so close armored Trojans. Well, that's talking about this and how mighty it is by wielding this 22 cubit. About Hector, this is at the ships. Now the ships are pulled up on shore, and the Trojans pushed them all the way back to their ships. So now they're in the ship, having to fight off the Trojans trying to burn their ships and get in their ships. So Hector's down below fighting the ships, and Aeus is up on top fighting them. So it talks about Hector. It says, but as a flashing eagle makes his plunge upon
upon other flying birds as these feed in a swarm by a river, whether these be geese or cranes or swans long-throated, so Hector steered the course of his outrush straight for a vessel with dark prows, and from behind Zeus was pushing him onward, hard with his big hand, and stirred on his people beside him. Now once again a grim battle is fought by the vessels. Let's see, I don't know what it talks about. Hector caught hold of the stern of a grand, fast-running, seafaring ship that once had carried Protesilaus to Troy and did not take him back to the land of his fathers. It was around his ship that now Achaeans and Trojans cut each other down at close quarters. Let's see, it talks about Hector. He would not let go of the stern of the ship where he had caught hold of it, but gripped the stern post in his hands and called to the Trojans, "Bring fire and give single voice to the clamor of battle. Now Zeus has given us a day worth all the rest of them. The ship's capture, the ships that came here in spite of the gods' will and had visited much pain on us by our counselor's cowardice, who would not let me fight by the grounded ships, though I wanted to, but held me back in restraint and curbed in our fighters." You see. Spoke, and they thereby came on harder against the Argives. Their volleys were too much for Aeus, who could hold no longer his place, but had to give back a little, expecting to die there, back to the 7-foot midship, and gave up the high deck of the balanced ship. There he stood and waited for them, with his pike always beat off any Trojan who carried persistent fire upon the vessels. He kept up a terrible bellowing and urged on the Danaans. "Friends and fighting men of the Danaans, henchmen of Ares, be men now, dear friends. Remember your furious valor. Do we think there are others who stand behind us to help us? Have we some stronger wall that can rescue men from perdition? We have no city built strong with towers lying near us within which we could defend ourselves and hold off this host that matches us. We hold position in this plain of the close-armored Trojans bent back against the sea and far from the land of our fathers. Salvation light is in our hands' work, not in the mercy of battle." He spoke and came forward with his sharp spear, raging for battle. And whenever some Trojan crashed against the hollow ships, with burning fire, he sought to wake the favor of Hector. Aeus would wait for him and then stab with a long pike, and so from close up wounded 12 in front of his vessels. When Achilles finally kills Hector in book 23, now in book 24 he decides to give some big contests.
Celebrate
the victory. It's not a victory yet, but it's a victory insofar as they've killed Hector. They still haven't won Troy yet, but they've killed Hector, so they're going to celebrate and have some games. So Achilles, since he killed Hector, he's the one that's putting on the games, and he's offering all the prizes for the winners. So he decides to have a horse race, So spoke the son of Peleus, and the swift riders gathered. Far the first up to rise was the lord of men, Eumelos, son of Adamantos, who surpassed in horsemanship. After him rose the son of Tydeus, strong Diomedes, and led under the yoke of the Trojan horses whom he had taken by force from Aeneas. But Aeneas himself was saved by Apollo. After him rose the son of Atreus, fair-haired Menelaus. Description of the horses and all the men therein.
And their names.
There's advice to his son, you know.
On horsemanship. Now tell me about it in your own words.
Well, he's telling his son that his horses aren't really that fast as the other horses, so that the only way he can win is by skill and horsemanship. If he does all the right things and hits everything at the exact right time, he can still win, even though his horses aren't as fast. Because at just the right angle and whips his See, if he makes his outside horse go faster and pulls in his inside horse, then the chariot will go around at a quicker turn than if he just went around normal. See, so in other words, he's braking on one side and speeding up on the other side so that it'll go around faster. And he's got to be careful not to let the hub touch the post, because if that happens, then it'll tear up his chariot. See? This is on the battlefield. The night before the big battle that everybody's anticipating. And it's night, and you should look out over the field of the battle plane. You can see all the fires of all the tents, you know, around. And describes it here. It says, "So with hearts made high, these sat night long by the outworks of battle, and their watchfires blazed numerous about them, as when in the sky the stars about the moon shining are seen in all their glory, when the air has fallen to stillness, and all the high places of the hills are clear. Fires were burning there in the plain, and beside each one sat 50 men in the flare of the blazing firelight, and standing each beside his chariot, champing white barley and oats, the horses waited for the dawn to mount to her high place." Always got to throw something about horses in there.
50,000.
This is Channel 2 Over around 780, Channel 2 Over around 780, and the end of the talk with Nick. Nick's reporting on Monday night, 22nd December 69. Monday night, 22nd of December 69. Nick is following up his Thanksgiving reporting. Monday night, the 22nd of December 69. This is Channel 2 Over around 785 now. 785 now. Channel 2 Over around 785 now, and Nick has done done this reporting, following up his reporting on Thanksgiving. Now it's 790, Channel 2 Over.